The podcast on Haunted Hill will contain spoilers and swearing.
I am the devil, and I am here to do the devil's work.
Bring some of this back home. Be one of us.
I didn't tell you my name.
Hang up.
I didn't tell them my name.
Hello and welcome to the podcast on Haunted Hill, episode 6. God, 6, man.
666.
Well, it's not 666, because that would be a bit...
It's one of
a bit lot.
One of us knows.
Okay, well, when we get to episode 666, we have a little party.
We'll have to do the omen.
Open a bottle of sparkling water.
Woo! Because that's what we drink, isn't it?
Not compared to last episode.
Oh, dear. What happened on the last episode, Gab?
Well... Episode 5 was you and I, me slouching in a chair to the point where you said, you haven't talked for a while, and I haven't really, I've just been sort of sitting here hanging out. We drank red wine, then we drank beer, then cider, then we drank half a bottle of Jägermeister.
Yeah.
So yeah, I apologise for that podcast, it's very lounging, but it was the love podcast, wasn't it?
Yeah, there's a lot of loving going on. Not physically, but we were loving the booze that night.
No, I don't remember any physical.
You were asleep.
I thought something was wrong when I woke
up. Yeah. So yeah, that was last episode.
Yeah, Jesus. So hello and welcome. I'm your host as always, Mr. Gav Chucky Steele. I'm sitting here with my host, Mr. Dan Bone.
Woo! That's me.
We're both in the same room again.
This is crazy off the chain shit.
It's off the fucking chain. I'm sitting here also with another friend of ours.
Yeah, who's this guy?
Mr. Andy Clark.
Good evening.
Andy, what do you do? You know, you've done some bits and bobs of us with Deadbolt Films. What's your little role in our little...
world. Our little world.
I don't know what to say. Our A-team.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I was very, very fortunate enough for you to let me... hang around on set and hold a microphone, do the field recording for Shadow of Death.
Yeah, location sound. This location is our man sound, who recorded all the sound bar 2 days for the Shadow of Death. So all the clarity from that movie, when you listen to it, you can thank this man for.
Every crunch of every footstep, every leaf.
Every little bit.
Everything. Moist? What?
I don't know.
Everything he did,
drop the tone all the time. So that's good. So it's nice. He's come to discuss one of the films. Well, no, two of the films. Except one of them, he never got to the end of. So we're going to spoil it for him. So it's tough, really.
Tough shit.
When it comes down to, we've got a double YouTube movie. It's a double ender. Right. Well, we've got the first movie we're going to be doing.
Well,
it's
a theme, isn't it? This episode.
It's a mad doctor theme.
Mad crazy doctor.
Jesus.
Sorry.
It's a mad doctor themed episode. Basically, we are going to talk about Dr. Giggles, the crazy... I always thought he was a dentist. He's not a dentist. He does a bit of dentistry in it, though.
He's fucking nuts, isn't
it? And we're also talking about Reanimator. And we're going to talk about, for World of Strange, we're going to talk about Dr. Shipman.
Yes.
A.K.A. Dr. Death.
Dr. Harold Shipman.
And we're going to just discuss this crazy, crazy British serial killer.
Yeah,
who killed a lot of people. Yeah. But we'll get into that. For the music segment, because we're that organised, we're actually having a song of mine. I'm not being big-headed playing a song of mine, but I did a song from my album, Revenge of Dr. Death. I've got a song called Revenge of Dr. Death. So it's just like, well, we'll just play that as well. Jasmine for World of Strange has talked about... Who did she talk about?
She has talked about... Frankenweenie. Because she's keeping with the theme of the Mad Doctors.
Yes, she told that. And obviously, last episode, she did also a Tim Burton film where she talked about The Corpse Bride. Valentine's special.
He makes good kid horror movies, that guy.
He's not bad.
But he's got a bit shit recently.
A lot of directors and things like that do sort of... It's the same with bands. They start to lose their way, don't they?
I think with directors and actors, it's usually because... They hit a time in their life when they have kids and they want their kids to see their work. Do you know what I mean? Like comedians like Eddie Murphy.
Really?
Do you not think so? I think comedians like Eddie Murphy and that, they sort of have started doing kid stuff.
Well, Dario Argento, he's done a lot of amazing stuff. His first movie, The Bird with Crystal Plumage, was a great film. Except now he's just gone and released Dracula 3D.
Oh, Jesus
Christ. With Rutger Hauer as Van Helsing, which you think, that sounds pretty fucking amazing. It does sound good. But it's supposed to be really bad. And his daughter, Asio, is in it. And she's getting her boobs out again, I think, in it, like she always does in his movies. So which I don't think weird. He's making his movies for his kids to see. That's for fucking
he's
sure.
Making his kids getting their boobs out, boobs.
Which is just weird. Fucked, isn't it, really?
That is weird.
But anyway, so I don't know. I think some film folks, some musicians, things like that, they lose their way.
Yeah. John Carpenter's another one. We talked about him a couple of episodes ago. Kind of like, he had, at one point, he was the king, wasn't he?
Yeah, but I liked his Masters of Horror segment.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is...
Cigarette Burns. That's very good. Have you seen Cigarette Burns, Andy?
No.
Excellent. It's on YouTube. Who's Daryl from The Walking Dead? He's basically, it's like, have you seen The Ninth Gate?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like that. But there's this film which is made by Satan, I think, and this rich guy pays Daryl from Walking Dead, whatever the fuck his name is, I don't know, to go and find this movie. And it's just crazy. Anyone who sees the movie just goes mental. It's pretty fucking good, and that was John Carpenter.
I'm going to check that out. You've mentioned
that.
He did
another one called Pro-Life as well, about abortion. That wasn't as good. I think he did Pro-Life. He then obviously did The Ward.
Yeah.
Fit Chick. What's she called? Johnny Depp's new bit of stuff.
Oh, is it? Jesus Christ.
Yes.
Tim Burton's other half.
Who?
Johnny Depp.
Okay, you fucking confused me. There's a love triangle then. Do you reckon Tim Burton, Johnny Depp and...
I think there's something weird going on there. Not weird, because, you know... That's fine.
Well, Tim Burton's missus lives next door, doesn't she, in London? They've got separate houses.
What the heck? That's all weird. Those two need to stop making movies together.
Internet porn's all I say. Right.
What?
Well, yeah, keep that yourself to themselves. Okay, cool. Well, that's pretty much the intro. What films have you been watching? Andy! Have you seen any movies recently? Let's throw it out at him.
Horror movies. Specific.
You don't have to mention horror. It doesn't have to be horror.
The dubious pleasure of watching The Monument Men yesterday.
Oh,
okay,
right.
That's not horror, but that's fine. You got Bill Murray. I'm all happy for Bill Murray's conversation on this podcast.
I want to know what this is like.
The Monument Meh is all I'm saying.
Yeah,
such a shame. You've got John Goodman
and
Bill Murray.
Very odd. The first hour of the movie, I spent the entire time going, I should be really digging this. Like, the cast is amazing. Like, George Clooney's got a great track record directing, but it kind of just dove into it, didn't really do any groundwork with the characters. There wasn't a great deal of chemistry there. It wasn't particularly funny, so I kept finding myself trying to force myself to laugh. And then it switched about halfway through. All of a sudden, it became a bit more dramatic and pretty good.
Okay.
So I was left kind of feeling a bit weird, but because there was no groundwork, I didn't feel any kind of empathy towards the characters.
Would you say that producers probably came in and asked them to snip it down further and take stuff out? Which
quite possibly in the first sort of 20 minutes or so.
Okay.
Definitely.
So you couldn't really get into the characters and stuff?
No, but, I mean, Bill Murray was still amazing.
But John Goodman
was pretty amazing.
But because
as well.
That happened, second viewing of that film, you would be more engaged.
Absolutely. I want to now watch it on
exactly.
that film and maybe
so that's
see it in cinema
much
against
of an issue.
Too. Yeah.
Okay, Dan, you seen anything?
Well, the only one I have seen, again, it's not a horror movie, but I wanted to really, really want to see this with the Oscars coming up and stuff, was Wolf of Wall Street.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Have you seen Andy?
I saw it twice. Once at work.
Twice?
Yeah, well, I work, because obviously I work with young people with disabilities, and sometimes the guy I work with goes to the cinema and I get him for free.
Amazing.
So he took me to see Wolf of Wall Street, and I just dug it so much that I took Jane to see it. It was
How
my wife.
Good is DiCaprio?
Saying that, though, I kind of wish that Matthew McConaughey had been in the whole movie.
I wanted more of him. I don't like him. And I wanted more of him.
I just went...
Jonah Hill. Oh, yeah, that bit was great. Jonah Hill was amazing as well.
Yeah, oh, incredible.
I've
got a funny feeling Jonah Hill's going to nap the best supporting actor.
I got that feeling.
So we're speaking about some filmmakers that they lose their way. Scorsese seems to be having this little bit of a
resurgence.
A few things he's been doing recently, like... Yeah, Hugo. I enjoy Shutter Island.
Yeah, good film.
And it's like his new muse being DiCaprio.
Yeah.
They're sort of almost bouncing off each other.
He's his new De Niro.
They've done like 5-6 movies together.
It's five, I think.
Yeah.
So that's cool, you know.
I'm reading, because I'm a geek and I'm into my movies.
It's probably
reading
probably
the trivia
energised him.
Well, reading the trivia and the stuff that went into making Wolf of Wall Street, I really like the film even more. The stuff that the cast put themselves through, stuff that Scorsese made them do, like Jonah Hill wanted to swallow a real goldfish for that scene with the goldfish. And obviously he wasn't allowed to do so, but he was allowed to keep it in his mouth for like 20 seconds maximum or something. And then when he gets punched in the face, that's a real punch. And Scorsese just filmed his face like swollen up over that scene. So much weird stuff went into that film. Like, and the fact that it's based on a true story just really is the icing on the cake.
Sometimes the making of movies make you like them more.
Apocalypse Now
was released on Blu-ray, I went out and bought it straight away. I'm not like an amazing like, over the top fan of that movie, but I spent like 23 quid or something on the Blu-ray, but I just bought it because it came with the making of documentary, which is about an hour and a half in itself. Have you seen that?
Yeah,
Heart of Darkness. Have you seen that?
Yeah, Heart of Darkness I've seen.
And it's just like it's the thing, the fact that if you movie nerds like us, buffs, geeks, whatever, you start watching movies, but then you find out the lore behind it, what happened and how it got into the situation like you're speaking of, it just makes it so much more interesting to watch the film.
Just gives you an extra dimension of appreciation, really, doesn't it?
The extra dimension of appreciation for Wolf of Wall Street for me was being a mad neighbours geek. Was seeing DiCaprio's wife. Jesus, she used to be in Neighbours. And she was fantastic in About Time. I saw About Time earlier this year. She was great in that with an English accent. And in this, she obviously does like a sort of Brooklyn.
And Joanna Lumley is amazing in it. She's only in it for like two or three scenes, maybe. Okay. I didn't know she was going to be in that. Snogging DiCaprio.
I know.
Apparently, he was really, really nervous during that scene. He was really,
didn't
really
nervous.
Didn't
he know who she was?
He knew she was. Oh, yeah. He loves Ab Fab. He's got the box set of Ab Fab.
Everybody
loves Ab Fab. Gav doesn't love it. Gav doesn't love it.
Okay, and that's the end of that podcast section, so screw all of you. Right, let's get into the first movie.
This is Jamie from Devour the Podcast. Do you enjoy horror commentary with straightforward honesty?
Oh my God, fuck this movie. Fuck this movie so hard.
Oh my goodness, you know, halfway through this movie, I was just like, let's get this thing going.
Fuck this movie. Humor and an obvious passion for the genre.
Kick him in the face.
I like the cut of your jib. The ceiling. And Grandma, don't make me get out the broom. Oh, your tears are like wine. They used to call that the vapors. Cupcakes are kind of the Schindler's List of desserts. It's a pure good. I love the idea of up-and-coming horror directors taking on the found footage genre. I really, really like that idea.
And that's really the worst thing you can commit as far as filmmaking is concerned, is making a film that's just average.
Well, that doesn't really inspire any kind of discussion, whether it's, you know, to rip it apart or praise it. Then you should spend time with David and me.
And Bo.
As we discuss horror films from old classics.
Deep Red. Empire of the Ants. Lisa and the Devil. The Baby. The Toxic Avenger.
To new favorites.
Absentia. Cabin in the Woods. The Loved Ones. Shadow of Death. VHS. The Woman.
Check us out on iTunes or at devourthepodcast.blogspot.com. Devour the Podcast is a proud member of the Horrorphilia Podcasting Network.
Hi, welcome back to the podcast on Haunted Hill. This is our first of a double ender of YouTube double build films. The first one is Dr. Giggles from 1992.
The psychopathic son of a mass murdering doctor escapes from his mental institution to seek revenge on the town where his father was caught. The giggling doctor kills his victims with a surgical theme, his goal being to give one of the town folk a heart transplant. So, Gav, you really wanted... Well, you didn't really want to watch this film, but you suggested it. You'd seen it before. I'd never seen it. Andy, you'd seen it?
This is a movie with history for me. I saw this movie when I was young and loved it. And then a couple of years ago, my good friend Nick, a.k.a. D-Flux, who was Deli Flux for Shadow of Death,
catering.
Some catering, bought it for me for Christmas. So I got to revisit it again like for the fourth or fifth time this time.
Nice one. So I'm a virgin to it, but you guys are... this is not the first time you'd seen this.
No, totally. Early 90s film. Straight from the get-go, I dig the Blood Cell credits.
Yeah, really love that.
it's set, of course, going like, okay, this isn't too bad. Then all of a sudden there's text credits saying music by Brian May. And it's like... Brian May.
I was excited when
yes,
I saw
it.
Yes,
it was, but then if you look into it, it's not the actual Brian May.
No, he did the music for Mad Max.
Brian May died, he's departed now.
He did the music for Mad Max 1 and 2.
Mm-hmm. Whereas the real Brian May, as in Queen, just looks like a weird cross between Beethoven and Wurzel Gummidge.
Hey, that's a good shout, actually. He really does.
The other thing I loved about the opening credits was I noted that Doug E. Doug played Trotter.
Doug.
Couldn't even work who Trotter was. But,
he was one of the kids in the house.
Okay, so
the black couple that go off to get jiggy
with
the
rooms. Well, let's explain. Let's talk about it. So we basically we start off with a really quite good opening with who we find out to be Dr. Giggles doing an operation. So you're taking it quite straightforward as he's a doctor just doing an operation in a theatre with the overhead windows which people can look out, students and stuff, for teachers. But then we obviously find out this is not the case. He's in a mental home and he's actually just escaped or something from his room or whatever, he's got tools, and he's just performing this bodged surgery, and the people overlooking are actually the other crazies in the place.
Nobody knows his real name, do they? They call him Dr. Giggles.
It's quite a good intro. It wasn't too bad. It's a bit blood and gore, and it's not that far off the beginning of Reanimator.
No, especially even the opening credits.
Credits as well. So I would say that they might have taken some things from that, but we can get into that. I hadn't really thought of it until now.
Another wonderfully politically correct portrayal of
a mental health institution
yeah, with the, totally. So one of the patients actually licked the window at one point.
Sometimes it things like because this is the 90s, you know. Come on, we're coming out of the 80s horror craze, you're going into the 90s when it was 90s horror movies, early 90s horror films dropped out of nowhere. People weren't funding them, they weren't making that much money. The whole video boom market thing had died down, and it was going more in towards the sort of late 80s, going more in keeping with the action films and things. I don't think horror's, you know, going along. So yeah, I reckon they pulled anything out of the bag, even on PC things such as that. So then we got he gets basically captured, and what happens to actually capture? Oh no, he escapes, doesn't he?
Yeah, he escapes and runs off, and that's really just the intro, really. We then get introduced to this group of like high school kids.
It's a typical bunch of kids going off to have debauchery, as in
school's out, isn't it?
School's out,
drinking. Woo! And that, and they just go into this house which has been which was Dr. Giggles' family house, and it's just pretty much been abandoned. It looks like it's a really nice looking location. It does look very nice, the creepy house, the bent up. I love the fact that the gates are really so bent up, it's almost like, how did that happen? Did actually someone come in with a cart and just yank it out? And was it like pitchforks of the townsfolk going to the house like in Frankenstein, is what I'd imagined from that, just seeing that. But that's my own imagination.
That's what comes out later, isn't it?
It is indeed what comes out later on.
So that's a really good little thing, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, this bit's quite good because these kids go in this house sort of on a dare for each other, don't they? And this is the point where they sort of tell the story, like that the urban legend about this guy, this Dr. Giggles guy, or you know, this was Mad Dr. Crazy's house where he used to kill all his patients, blah blah blah. So it's pretty, again, I like it when they do a backstory like that.
There was even a song as well.
There was a song. This has a theme. This is crazy, but this has a theme, this song.
I've got a great note. It says severed arm boob grab.
Severed arm? Oh yes. That happened. That happens in Dr. Giggles.
You can't see this because you're listening, but double thumbs up from me. the only person I knew here was the guy who had a Jamaican bobsleigh team.
Yeah, Dougie Doug.
That's Dougie Doug.
Yeah, wow. Dougie Fresh Prince, Dougie Doug. He gets killed.
Eight-legged freaks as well.
Basically, the kids go off in the house and they get killed, as you can imagine. We don't need to go into some detail. It's not worth it because it's just be too slow talking about this film.
But there's some deaths straight away.
There's some deaths, and you get in there. The death toll on this was, I think, about 17, if I'm not mistaken, if I remember. I was getting a real Scream vibe off this, being that Scream was 96, this is 92. You've got the main girl is a very innocent brunette virgin.
She's got
of cool, good looking boyfriend whose mother has died.
Was it the girl who was in Charmed? Wasn't she?
I don't know. Yeah, I recognise her, but I don't know. I know that her boyfriend.
Oh, no, she was. My missus said it was. I don't know her shit, but my missus said it was.
I know her boyfriend, Max. I was really happy to see him because I really like him as an actor, and he's dead now. He passed away. He, before you said anything, Gav, I do watch it and I love it. He was an angel, and he was quite a big character in the first season. He played Doyle, who passed away not long after his character got killed off in Angel. So it's quite like sad to see him, because I've not really seen him in anything other than that. And whenever I see him on screen, I always think, oh, God, that guy's kind of passed away. And I always love him in everything he's in. So it was quite nice to see him in there. So that was somebody else I recognised.
Is there a like poltergeist curse thing going on there with Angel?
Anyone that's been an angel dies. David Boreanaz isn't real now. He's now just a hologram in Bones.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Dead. He's dead.
I don't know what you're talking about. Well, screw you all. Let's get on with it. The director did not do much in this, after this, really, or anything else. But he is a bit of a writing producer for Dexter and 24.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, which is fair enough. No, that's respectful. I've not seen any of 24. Not much more respectful enough. Okay, so what's going on? Anyone want to give a bit more of a plot? What happens now after all this?
The girl from Charmed, the main girl.
Initial double sequence of deaths. Obviously, the initial introduction to Dr. Giggles, then going into a group of kids, so we know he's there at the house. Then we get actually connected to the... introduced to the actual characters we're going to be following through the film. What's going on? Who are these people?
The girl, the main girl from Charmed, whose name escapes me now, she has got a weak heart. Like you said earlier, her mum's dead or died quite recently, I should imagine, because it seems like her and her dad are struggling to keep their relationship together. And she's got this boyfriend, Max, who is played by the guy from Angel. And it's all... She's having problems with her heart. She's got to wear a heart monitor, hasn't she? Mm-hmm. Which comes into play a bit later on. So she's... I don't really know what that device is, really. What is that, to monitor her heart, to make sure her heart's all right? Or is it an actual pacemaker?
No, I got it. It's like a monitor kind of thing.
So it's just a monitor. Cause it looks like a big Walkman or something, doesn't it? Being there, we're just out of the 80s, it looks like she's just walking along with a massive Walkman
it
on her head.
It could be.
So we find that's going on, and that she's got a bit of a dodgy heart. Her boyfriend's also a bit of a dick, isn't he?
Her mum died from a heart condition.
Yeah.
That's right.
So she's left with her dad, who was the dad in Flight of the Navigator.
He was the dad in Flight of the Navigator.
That's what I picked up. And the kind of a stepmum or girlfriend who, obviously, don't get on with.
No. It's the time old tale, isn't it?
And they're at school, at high school sort of thing. There's other people. There's the different type of kids, the sort of stoner kids, the sort of the slut babes type of things. They're not that baby, though. Babish, sorry, not baby.
Jesus.
Going into Serbian film territory there. I like the fact Giggles has some Schwarzenegger lines going on when he's killing people. At one point, he pumps someone's stomach and says, "I know, it sucks."
He says a lot of things like, "The doctor is in."
Yeah.
"And take your medicine." And things like that. Yeah, that was one of the best bits for me, actually.
I really used to like this film, but I did find it a little boring this time around. I don't know if I'm so desensitized, or not in, say, as in gore and graphic violence, but as in generally films and the quality of films nowadays, I just found it a little tedious slightly, which was a shame because I did enjoy it a lot more. What do you guys think? You still on board, or is this your first time? Yeah,
yeah. I was like, you kind of like hyped it up for me, and it didn't quite live up to what I expected, but I still did enjoy it. Definitely, there were some great deaths in it. It was a very silly, throwaway movie. Every death was definitely gory and original. One of my notes is saxophone blowjob. There was that scene going on with the girl.
That was odd.
And he's like, "Blow it. No, use your fingers." Weird
was
scene.
That, was that not a good impression of
that? That was a great impression of a saxophone blowjob. Again, brilliant. There we go. That's Gav giving a saxophone blowjob. Fantastic. Yeah, silly little things like that. Every death was pretty good. And you knew you were going to get that ridiculous one-liner with each death. I also like the fact there was a kid in it playing Dr. Mario on the Nintendo. There playing Dr. Mario.
And Giggles has killed the people upstairs. And he comes downstairs and just says, there's no hope for the kid.
Terminal.
Is he looking into the future of children? Because, fucking hell, kids are computer games nowadays, you know.
There's a couple of cuts away while he was killing the people upstairs. The kid had this like sweep across fringe thing, and he cut away, and it came back, and he had this straight bowl cut fringe. And I was like, "Damn, he's not only playing Mario, but he's actually restyling himself."
Continuity issues.
Classy.
My interest in this film did pick up. I don't know if I'm jumping so far ahead from you guys, but just go.
Well, hang on,
before
you say anything, there's just one thing I really want to say about that.
Because I'm about to go into a flashback with him as a kid.
Okay.
So if you want to get up to that, go
ahead. I do really want to quickly say one thing before you say that, and that is, how fucking weird was that scene? in the bedroom while the kid was playing Nintendo. Because that guy's like, hey, you know my parents are away and I've stolen my mum's sexy underwear. Why don't you put it on for me? What is going on there? He wants his girlfriend to dress up in his mum's sexy underwear because he thinks it's hot. She's like, it's a bit weird. He's like, nah, it's hot, do it. No wonder, I'm happy that
this is when he dropped the condom down the toilet.
And he drops the condom.
Oh, that dude with that haircut.
That dude needed killing from Dr. Giggles, man.
Why didn't he know about a condom?
I don't know what's wrong with him. He's about 21. He should have known what a condom was.
Jesus. You know.
That's why Dr. Giggles cut his winky.
Well, he didn't. He cut his winky right off. That's what happened to him, man. And his girlfriend was wearing his mum's underwear.
How did she die?
She...
Was she in a stomach pump?
No, she just got killed with a skull.
That was the sort of stepmom girlfriend.
Yeah, some of the deaths at the beginning were just a bit lacking.
Oh, he gets
there wasn't anything going on, but then they could get a bit better.
He says to her, "I need to take your temperature." So he opens her mouth up and he rams the thermometer right through the back of her head.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's how she gets hers. Anyway, so let's go to this flashback, Gav.
It's a flashback of him as a kid, and this is where he sees his mum die with his dad. His dad was a doctor as well, and. This is kind of where he gets his giggle from, when his dad just starts giggling away. But then it cuts to the it's a night guard in a hospital, or in a mortuary.
Yeah,
hears sound, goes in, and presumably this is his mum.
Yeah, there's a woman on a slab, isn't there? A dead
and all of a sudden
lady.
He just sees, and this straight away, this is like, man, this is pretty good effects.
Mm.
This is where we've got a naked woman's body, and all of a sudden, alien style, the stomach starts to move and you can see shape coming out of it. And all of a sudden it just splits, a scalpel comes through and cuts through it. And this kid just comes out of blood and gore all over and comes
now,
out of stomach.
Like,
it's almost like a rebirthing.
This is the child who's about 9, 10.
Yeah,
it's not a baby.
No.
A full-grown child comes out of this woman's body and it transpires that his mental dad had sewn him up in his dead mother's womb stomach. This is like, just before that scene, I started sort of thinking, something good better happen soon. Something fucking mentally good did happen. That bit was crazy.
Yeah.
I've never seen anything quite like that.
I wonder if we can find out what the kid did afterwards, because I reckon that probably messed him up.
Therapy, I would
Jesus
say.
Christ.
Yeah, that bit was pretty crazy, really. And you can see why, well, you can't see why, there's no excuse for being a crazy psychopathic doctor giggling and killing everyone, but you can see why doing that would mess somebody up. Like, what the hell was that? I mean, that flashback was absolutely crazy and I was not expecting that at all.
It did, yeah, it definitely did. No, I can't find him. It did definitely raise my interest levels at that point.
Unfortunately, it got a bit boring here and there when it kept going back to the kids, and you get this like bit of a convoluted story where Jen, her name is, the main girl from Charmed, she finds out that Max, her boyfriend, is kind of cheating on her a bit as well, and you get this whole thing, and then she starts rebelling, and is this where she rips off her heart monitor and throws it in the fish tank in anger?
Yeah.
As you would, you know, you'd throw it in the fish tank, fuck it, yeah. And then, just to make matters worse, she hears her dad having sex with her stepmum. She comes home and they're having a whale of a time up there. She's not having that. She goes out. I'm going back out. And he hears
and
her leave.
And the dad goes, oh, I'm going to have to go out. No, what are you doing? Keep, you know.
Keep going.
Get back on it. Get in there. What are you doing? The kid's big enough to look after herself. Fuck's sake. You know. But, you know, Jesus. Okay, continue that.
Sorry, no, I was just saying. So basically she throws her thingy, and her dad comes out and says, oh, where's Jen? And then he finds her heart monitor, so he goes off to try and find her. She runs away. Where does she go?
She goes, she ends up at the fair, and she ends up in like the Hall of Mirrors thing.
Mm.
And there's that fantastic moment where one of the characters runs into the Hall of Mirrors and runs straight into the plate glass window.
That bit was pretty good, actually, because Hall of Mirrors are weird and disorientating. And I always think of Enter the Dragon as well.
Yeah, that's what I immediately thought of.
The only thing I was watching it, but I was just speaking of it now, I think of it.
Not that I'm comparing this film to Enter the Dragon.
No, you're really not.
This is not in any way a Bruce Lee movie.
No, it isn't. There's more deaths, more filling, more killing things going on, more one-liners, Schwarzenegger, Alan Schwarzenegger, not as good.
What's his goal then? His goal, basically, Giggles, is he wants to cut someone's heart out.
He wants to help this girl.
He wants to get revenge on the town that kind of persecuted his dad and
yeah.
drive his dad
so
crazy.
She
like
runs
Frankenstein.
She runs to the old doctor's surgery, the old abandoned doctor's surgery slash house. And this is where she discovers...
such a great scene.
Yeah, this is really good, actually. This is where she discovers, in the sort of the style that Jason Voorhees used to do back in the day, when he used to kill everyone and then set all the bodies up.
Yeah.
Dr. Giggles has set up everybody who's been killed in the film, which I think was, like you said, 15, 16, 17 people. You've got this waiting room of corpses, all with their hearts cut out.
Do you imagine we've got
sat.
A Bob C team sitting there?
They're all just there, no hearts at all. That was a great scene. Fucking wicked. Like, she walks in, all these bodies
sitting
there.
It was very, very good.
Not seen anything like that. Well, I have in early slashers, but it's been a while since I've seen anything
It did remind me of the later Friday 13th, actually, that sort of thing.
And also, is it Happy Birthday to Me as well, where at the end she's got all the corpses around the table and she's like, yeah, it's my birthday.
Oh, spoiler.
Oh, sorry.
It reminded me of that classic M.O.R. I don't know who makes that song, but there's that song where there's a lyric in it that goes about collecting your jar of hearts.
Oh, right,
Dr.
okay.
Dr. Gibbs has collected this, like, little oil drum.
He's got literally a bucket of hearts, hasn't he?
Yeah. K&B did the effects for this.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because it was good
And it
effects.
Was actually K&B at that time, so...
To be fair, it was good effects, man, like, all the way through. That pretty consistent. You knew you were going to get bloody, slicey, deathy death scenes.
Indeed.
So he grabs Jen, Dr. Giggles.
Yep.
And he's like, right, I'm going to give you a heart transplant because you've got a weak heart. Which one of these hearts shall I put in your body? And this is where he starts going through the bucket that Andy mentioned. This one's too big, this one's too small.
Oh yeah, it was the Goldilocks thing.
It's crazy, that bit.
Ah, just right.
It's weird.
That's quite funny. I've got no more notes on this, so I'm ready to rate it, but if you guys want to carry on.
Well, I mean...
It was kind of this point where... Because the senior cop guy was the one who'd come across Giggles' dad.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, I don't want anything to do with this. But then he ends up getting killed. So the kind of renegade cop...
the newbie.
The newbie decides to take it on. And he goes from being this kind of wet-behind-the-ears cop to running into every scene going, motherfucker!
Yeah, shooting everybody in the head. He's really cool, actually.
He bursts in on Giggles doing the surgery.
Because you have got the whole policeman thing after them, and the old policeman earlier on, isn't it?
Yeah, but... He doesn't want anything to do
No,
it.
He doesn't. And
he thinks
at all.
Ridiculous.
But then the other guy's like, no, I'm going to have a look into it. And that's quite cool. It's always good to have the whole policeman thing. It's very much, you know, like some of the other movies, like My Bloody Valentine, that whole sort of thing as well, the policeman.
Yeah,
it's very the same traits as you get in sort of horror films.
It's the element of realism, because this many people die, and you're going to have a cop on the trail, aren't you? Like, it's not going to be just like, oh, everyone seems to be dying in the town. Oh, well. Yeah, it's the element of realism. I guess that sometimes they feel they have to force in. It works, sometimes it doesn't. This time it worked.
But it's the bit where he's about to, he's done the, does he stop? He stops her heart, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And there's the cop dude bursts in. It's, other than the rebirthing thing, it's like my favourite part of the entire movie, where he picks up a heart and he throws it at the cop and goes, here, have a heart.
Yeah, great line.
And the cop just goes, ah, shit.
Throws it. It goes a bit crazy around this point, because her ex-boyfriend or her boyfriend Max bursts in, and we get a big sort of fight with golf clubs. I thought that was quite funny, because doctors
are the dueling
golf,
doctors bit, yeah.
And they have like golf clubs, and the doctor comes in as well, and the cop, and everyone's getting shot. Somebody gets, I think a cop gets killed with an angle. That's like a big angle grinder, isn't it? So he calls that a big angle grinder. Someone gets killed with that, and it gets a bit crazy. There's a big fire.
Yeah.
I kind of got a bit lost at this point. It felt like too much was going on.
Well, all of a sudden, the boyfriend comes back, and because he's like being a brave guy and trying to save her, all of a sudden she just forgets the fact that, you know, she watched him cheat on her.
Saxophone blowjob.
After, reminded me of Airplane, where it's like, have you ever seen a grown man naked? Have you ever seen a grown woman flate a saxophone?
Yeah, so the ending was a bit messy for me.
Yeah.
At the end, it's quite cheesy, but I quite liked it because I like a bit of cheese. They have a little snog.
The final one-liner?
What's the one-liner at the end?
The final, when she finally kills Dr. Giggles with that crazy, like, tool that he's made.
Oh, like big gynecological instrument sort of thing that fires out another gynecological instrument.
Yeah.
Yeah, what does she say to him?
Oh, he looks at her and goes... Is there a doctor?
Yeah, she says, take two and call me in the morning.
Oh, that's
and
it.
She fires two of the bolts into his chest, and he goes, is there a doctor?
Yeah.
Falls down dead. Then she kisses her boyfriend, and her heart monitor goes, beep, 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 beep. And
August. But
it's all happy because that means her heart works and everything's good.
Can we rate this?
Yeah, I'm going to give it a thumbs up, a solid thumbs up. Like, it wasn't as good as I expected, but I've seen a lot worse.
Okay. Andy?
I spent the entire time like bouncing on my chair, all excited. Like, I was reliving being 12 again.
Would you give it thumbs up to watch? This isn't just like a thumbs up.
This is like Dr. Giggles has cut off all of my fingers and replaced it with 8 more thumbs. So I've got
10.
Like,
10 so you've got given it 10 thumbs up.
Yeah, I like this movie in a pure cheese kind of way.
I like to give it an extra thumb up just because one of the closing songs, other than its own themed song with lyrics about Dr. Giggles, was also a cover of Robert Palmer's Dr.
Giggles. It was the original, wasn't it?
I think it was a cover. I don't think it was Dr. Robert Palmer. But
I would say if you've not watched it, give it a watch if you're a horror film fan. It wasn't as good as I remembered it being for myself. So I'm giving it a wavy thumbs up.
Yeah. It's free on YouTube, isn't it? We all kind of liked it, ups and downs. Beep, boop, beep, beep. The end.
That was our review of Dr. Giggles, and now we have Ask Jasmine.
Ask Jasmine.
Hello, Jasmine. How are you?
Good.
You've seen a movie before called Frankenweenie, haven't you? It's like the classic story of Frankenstein, which is about a mad doctor that wants to create a person with bits of other people and stuff. Frankenweenie's a bit different though, isn't it? It's a boy who's dog. What
died.
Happens to his dog? Died. So what did he do?
He was playing tennis and the dog thought it was a ball for him to chase and he hit it too hard and the ball went in the road and the dog chased it and then it got running.
Oh no. Is it sad? Were you sad?
Mm-hmm.
Mm. So what did he do?
Well, he made him alive again.
He made him alive again? Wow.
Did he use electricity? Really
cool. Yeah.
Wow, so it's actually like Frankenstein, the movie and stuff. Okay, what else happened in the movie? Was there a cat? What happened to the cat?
She ate a dead bat when the girl put electricity onto the can and she started turning into a cat.
Okay.
A bat cat.
A bat cat. That could be a movie all in itself, couldn't it? Bat cat. That's cool.
Did you like the movie, Jazz?
Yeah.
Yeah? Mm. Was the Bat Cat your favourite bit, or was there another bit that was your favourite bit?
Well, my other favourite... Well, there was another favourite part.
Yeah, what happened?
A boy had, I can't remember what it was, but it was dead. He made
us
alive and it became giant and it was like a dinosaur.
Was it a hamster, dinosaur, monster? It was giant, wasn't it? Yeah.
Oh, is that good?
It was a frog.
A frog, was it?
Did this movie scare you?
No.
Did you like it being in black and white or would you like it more in colour?
More in colour.
Why? Just prefer movies in colour? Okay. Would you recommend this to your friends on the playground?
Yes.
You would? Yeah?
Did it make you laugh?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? Okay, cool. So you give it a thumbs up? So that's Frank and Weenie. Cool. Thanks, Jasmine.
Thanks, Jazz.
Hello, welcome back. That was the Ask Jasmine segment where she was talking about that. What did she talk about?
Frankenweenie.
Frankenweenie, because it's our Mad Doctor episode. We are, if it sounds a bit different, we're in a different place. We're amongst the dead, so to speak. We're above the infamous funeral parlour, which I like to frequent once in a while, and come up and visit the killer of the Shadow of Death and the star of a couple of the short films, Tinnitus and... Now, burying the paranoid, Mr. John Brown.
Hello, John.
Hello. Thank you.
Hello.
Good evening.
John is going to give us the synopsis for this great, 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 great film that I fucking watched again and loved.
It is fucking excellent. What was the film?
Years ago. Reanimator.
Reanimator. Everybody, it's a good movie, yes? Oh
yeah.
Andy's first time.
Andy had not seen this.
That is mental. When he told me the other day, I was like crazy. I'd get on it, man, and join this discussion. Okay, John, do you want to just go through the synopsis via IMDb, please?
Yes. A dedicated student at a medical college and his girlfriend... Well, medical college doesn't have a girlfriend. They become involved in bizarre experiments centering around the reanimation of dead tissue when an odd new student arrives on campus.
Ooh.
It's not a very good synopsis.
It's not.
You get the IMDb sometimes a little bit wag. This movie is fucking excellent. I loved revisiting this. It's always been a movie in my mind that is quite a harsh horror film, but fairly enjoyable. Harsh as in quite graphic with the gore. And it really stuck in my mind as horror movies as I grew up, compared to some of the others, which would be like, you know, whatever. So I say the Dr. Giggles we spoke about, it's like, you know, whatever. This is like excellent, excellent horror film.
Is that though with Brain Dead, that kind of...
It's so well produced for a first time movie directed by Stuart Gordon.
Is it his first movie?
Yeah. It was in theatre. Fear to Suffer For. And this was going to be a 16mm film shot in black and white. But then this, the producer...
Brian Usner.
He's the one who's in the market for doing a horror film, found out about it, read a script and said, no, let's make it like this. And they were going to shoot it at the theatre, but the theatre didn't want to have anything to do with such a film.
Stuart Gordon wrote Honey, I Shrunk the Kids.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, he wrote that. What the fuck? Like, he wrote that and he made The Reanimator.
Very different. The Reanimator's not made a bad film.
Like Dolls, Space Truckers, Stuck. You guys seen Stuck?
Yeah.
Really good movie, love that movie. About a guy stuck in a windscreen. He gets run over by Mira Savina, and he's just stuck in a windscreen for most of the film.
You know that film?
It's weird.
It was alright. I don't really like it. I always used to call it Fish Face, American Pie.
Fish Face?
I don't know, it's just my name for the Fish Face.
Big old forehead.
Fish Face. I don't know why.
Mira Savina from...
American Pie.
She's an American Pie, American Beauty.
Mina Savari.
Was in Replacement Killers.
Oh, yeah, I'm thinking of it. They've got similar names, haven't they?
I like
Fuck's sake, no, let's get back on with Reanimator.
Sorry about that.
Straight away, I love the way this tone is set. This introduction sequence was shot after they'd wrapped the whole film.
Dr. Gruber.
Yes, and they basically, Brian decided, I think the audience need this little bit of a... what the movie's about to help them go along. And it gives you a good tone of the film straight away for the Mad Doctor. It's like a real throwback to Frankenstein, eye bulging blood. It tells exactly what the film's going to be like. Then you go straight into that amazing credit sequence with the Bernard Herrmann inspired
really
score. I don't look at it as a plagiarism or copying it. I just think it's so inspirational. It is pretty much that, but it gave it that thing, like My Bloody Valentine we spoke about in the last episode. The problem with it never had a recurring musical theme, so it doesn't come across as such a classic as Halloween and Friday the 13th as such. This had this. You can get the best of 10 horror movie soundtracks, you get Reanimator on there, you know, along with Exorcist, Jaws
and Psycho. Well, you don't need both on the same one, do you?
It's a great beginning. The guy who did the credit sequence went on to do a lot of the big Hollywood credit sequences. And this one is the first earlier ones, but it's great. It's really good.
It's similar, as we say, to...
Similar to Dr. Giggles. Yeah.
It's kind of inside the body, drawings of, like, medical descriptions of anatomy and things like that. It's kind of like fading in and out of the screen, and you've got that great score. It really feels epic. I fucking love it.
Which one? Well, this, definitely.
Yeah, I love it.
Then we got after that we go into our protagonist, this young guy called Bruce, and his girlfriend Megan. I love the bit when they're playing around at the medical school and she's saying no. Then there's a lovely humorous edit cut to her then in bed saying yes. Cheap edit gag, but it's fucking good.
I think shortly followed by my favourite bit, which was when they kind of just had sex and then the cat just gets projectiled onto his back.
That's the way they just threw a cat.
And then they put this, they dubbed this sound effect in afterwards. It was supposed to be sort of a wailing cat, but it sounded more like a giant killer bee. It was all like, meow.
cheap movie making.
Beautiful.
So this film has these medical students who are studying under the Dr. Hill.
David Gale.
David Gale, an actor who is now deceased, but he was very good. When he went for, when they were casting for this role, they looked at him as a sort of, who is he? Classic horror icon.
Boris Karloff?
Boris Karloff. They thought of him as a sort of Boris Karloff. Like, we've got to have this guy. You know, because they were going for like the best horror film they could sort of do.
In some ways, he's almost the baddie of the film, really, isn't he? In some ways.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. Actually,
he is definitely.
Is Herbert West a villain? Because this has come up before. In
this is almost like the discussion we had recently of the original RoboCop, where you've got the guy who's actually there saying, "Look, I've made a new thing which can help the police without more policemen being killed, and it can go in and on the streets to help them." And I used to look at that guy thinking he was a bad guy, the one who's doing coke with the girls.
Yeah.
And actually he's not, he's actually doing a good thing, and it's the other people who are bad. So it's the same principle here. Herbert West isn't really, he's actually trying to fucking,
because
he's
all about the work. He doesn't really see it as good or evil.
No, he just wants to be the one who goes down in history in medical books as the guy who created coming back to life reanimation.
He's basically Frankenstein, isn't
it? It is. It's a modern day Frankenstein.
But he is a bit twisted. Like he decides to just bring this guy's cat back to life.
Mary Shelley and H.P. Lovecraft. What eras were they?
Lovecraft was writing in the 20s, I think, and Mary Shelley,
1800s.
Okay, so he probably took something from that, and then they adapted different stories of Reanimator from. Was there different stories?
It was. No, it was something. It was a series he wrote. I think it was to order. You know, someone sort of commissioned him to write it for them. And it is a. It's not. It is. It's kind of a series of stories. They're all connected. You know, it all sort of follows on. It's all, you know, in chronological order. But then if you read the story, most of what is in the original story is actually in Reanimator 2. Like, remember with the body parts, they've got the cellar that's linked to the cemetery next door.
And all the animals.
Yeah.
Because he starts linking up animals and body parts.
Yeah, doesn't he?
I think that was in some of those as well.
To me, I mean, going back to what you were saying about Herbert West to see a villain, the whole thing, like the two different sides of obsession. Because you've got one guy who's obsessed with trying to do something which could have a positive effect, something like push work. And then you've got the other guy who, like David Gale, his obsession was, you know, kind of twisted because of his obsession with Megan and all that. So it's like it was leading him down these kind of messed up paths.
And he only really wanted the fame, I think. Because, he says, "Oh, this discovery will make me famous."
Yeah, that's what he's after.
So, this Herbert West has been a tutor of this guy who you see in the opening sequence before the credits, who was his teacher, who was studying brain reanimation and how long the brain can survive after the heart stopped pumping blood. And you could see at this point Herbert West had basically reanimated his teacher. Did he? You don't know if he'd killed his teacher or what. You don't really know this until you've seen the movie. Like, now we can look back on it. Obviously this episode is going to be full of spoilers, and if you haven't seen this movie, no offense, Andy, but you're an idiot. Because
well,
this is
seen it now.
He has seen it now, so you're
I legitimise it, because when I was watching a lot of these kind of movies, I was getting them rented for me by my mum from video stores, so I was going for things like Jack Frost that had like Snowman on the
I had it on Sky Movies.
Right, Reanimator kind of looked a bit sketchy. I don't think my mum would have let me watch that, to be honest.
So we are going to spoil this film. So, we go back to Megan and Bruce. They are at this medical school. Dan, is it?
Yeah.
Bruce is the actor.
Ah, okay. Okay, sorry.
Bruce Abbott?
Yeah.
Yes, very good.
There is a Bruce Campbell thing there.
Yeah. That's not good. So, they're here, and Dr. Hill is their tutor. And then the dean comes in and says, "We've got a new student coming." Student being, obviously, Herbert West. Old dean, he says to Dr. Hill, "Oh, I think you'd be quite interested, because he is working with
Hans Gruber.
Hans Gruber! And obviously, the if you're in a profession of medical research into this thing, there's probably only going to be a certain amount of people through the world who are possibly doing it. That's what we were kind of putting across, stipulating, aren't they? So they would know of each other's work. This is pre-internet, but medical books and things like that, and lectures and stuff like that, you'd know these people. So straight away, the introduction's just like, oh man, Herbert West comes across as a prick. Yeah. He basically says to the teacher, well, your methods, you know, and it sort of goes into just dissing this guy who's going to be his teacher.
Perhaps you've sort of stolen more of Dr. Gruber's ideas, then at least you have ideas.
He's yes, really I look forward to seeing you in class and walks out. So then we're back to the Randy couple getting that on. And we've got the Halloween almost sheets over the head off they've been fucking, and he gets up and goes out to the school, scaring Megan. They're walking out of the room, and he's put up a basically already in the college. He's put in the hospital, put up a sign saying he needs someone to come share a flat, rent a room in his flat. So they open a door and it's Herbert West. And this is the only point in the movie of Herbert West is actually quite an innocent sort of person. Hello, I'm Herbert West. I've come for the room. And this is the only point he's very innocent in that before he goes into the way he is. And he comes in and Megan's basically like, you can't let this guy in. You can't let him. And he's like, well, if it's a problem, I can pay every first of the month, and pulls out a wad of cash.
But he goes downstairs and he's like, oh, your basement's quite good. I think I'll take it. And he's like, no, it's not really the basement I'm renting, but if you want the basement as well, like you say, he just goes, here's some money, fuck it, I'm out of your basement, mate.
This is 12 minutes into the film. Straight away though, so early in the movie, the production all round is excellent.
A million dollar budget, that's all they had.
Well, 85, I don't know what that comes to nowadays, but even the acting in it is incredible. Herbert West, so Jeffrey Combs. My grandfather-in-law is called Jeffrey Combs. Ooh. Crazy. They didn't know, they were so young when filming, they didn't know anything about stealing scenes and stuff like that, but the girl who played Megan says that Jeffrey Herbert West was just, you know, really on par. He was just fucking, he was on it. With him and Dr. Hill, they were almost, knew that they were both the top level of what they were as their characters.
I think he came from theatre, didn't he, Jeffrey Combs?
This is why it comes across very well. Stuart Gordon was doing theatre stuff with his wife, so he did a lot of...
He's also in the film.
Yeah, it's the doctor. One of the doctors. They did a lot of rehearsals, and when coming from theatre, you know, it's something you do. And I've always liked people, actors who come from stand-up comedy or from stage, because they can go into roles very, very easily and pull off lines very, very more like they were live on stage. So they nailed it, you know. And it comes across. It looked like it, you know.
The same couldn't be said, unfortunately, for Dan, the character.
No, really? No.
I liked him, but he was a bit wooden and a bit, like, as Andy, you described him as a bit wet.
There's a bit later on in the movie where he has to deliver the line, I love you to Megan, and he just kind of goes, I love you. it sort of trickles out of his mouth with no conviction whatsoever.
I guess he's supposed to be the hero, because otherwise, you know, the only...
He is. He's in the best of the end, he's a fucking Bruce Willis,
he's like the good guy, he's like the guy that you're supposed to like and think that he should get what he wants.
Herbert gets the room, then the first day of school, This is great, when Dr. Hill was going through 6 to 12 minutes, brain will last for 6 to 12 minutes looking at Herbert West. Herbert West is sitting there,
the whole thing was
snapping pencils. Mr. West, I suggest you get a pen.
They hate each other, those two.
It was very good, and that goes on.
This is where the film, now this is where the tone's set for me, because...
To be fair, Dr. Hill's a dick.
He is a dick.
Yeah.
So this is where the tone shifts and is kind of set for me, because Dan then wakes up in the middle of the night to this awful fucking sound, and he's like, what the hell is this noise?
Yeah.
And he can hear, like...
Yeah, but before that... That's the cat's reanimation.
Oh, of course.
Before that,
Megan discovers
did she discover? She's been in
the Well, they're looking, aren't they? They're like, where the fuck's the cat, Rufus? And they're looking around. And she just...
Normally, Rufus would be thrown onto my back by now.
When she goes snooping around, which really pisses off Herbert, she goes in his room and opens his fridge in his room, and there's Rufus dead.
Yep. Did he kill the cat, though?
We don't know.
He says, oh, he got his head stuck in the jar.
He killed the cat. Of course he did.
But he claims that the cat was stuck in the jar and died and suffocated, which is a bit weird to me, but... So yeah, later on that
Imagine
night...
Imagine seeing that, though, coming home, and this cat just running up to you with a jar, squashed into a jar.
I'm willing to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Oh, right, okay, well, let's give him that, you know.
So this is where it all changes now for me. So he wakes up in the middle of the night, Dan, and he hears this god-awful sound, which then leads into this scene where he goes down to the basement, and Herbert has indeed reanimated the fucking cat, which has got like a... It's all a bit mangled up, and it's on his back. And it's not great effects, but it works, and it's really, really funny. And this is where I start thinking, okay, this is going to be quite good fun, this film. Especially as this whole scene ends with them bonding over, like... Because they don't really like each other very much. They don't trust each other. But now they start bonding because they have to kill this, like, reanimated cat together. And they're, like, chasing it around the basement with a shovel.
They smash the crap out of that
they
basement.
They beat the shit out of it.
They don't know where the cat is, but they're just enjoying smashing.
There it is! And they run over... There it is! And then they run over there.
They're hitting nothing. The thing is, though, they're both medical students, so as soon as West starts telling Dan about what's going on, he starts being interested. And as soon as it happens, he then goes out to the dean and says, look, I've seen reanimation. West can do it.
Yeah.
And the scenes were cut out of this. Dr. Hill came across to me as a Dracula figure. The way he can manipulate people to doing things. The scenes cut out where he was almost like a hypnotist. And he actually did, with the dean, say to him about stuff and saying to him that he's not good for Megan, which is obviously the
Megan version, because I saw a version with that in it.
There is a scene later on they left in when he's talking to
Megan. Is the daughter of the dean, but I haven't mentioned that.
And he says, oh, you, Dr. Hill says to Herbert West, oh, you will give me what I want, or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
He tells the dean that, you know, the guy's no good for him or whatever, good for Megan.
Dr. Hill wants Megan's
Putang. Yeah.
And not bad Putang either, when we get to that.
And that's also something that West uses against Dan, because he says, you know, if you tell anyone about this, I'll tell everyone that you're banging the dean's daughter. And this is just, it's all kind of revealed.
Obviously, the dean must have known that. I thought that's not really much for a threat.
And also, Dr. Hill starts then revealing that he might have a bit of a crush on his mate's daughter as well.
Yeah, exactly.
It's all a bit weird.
I think it's the best Jeffrey Combs role next to The Frighteners.
He's brilliant.
It's so good. The whole script of this film is very, very tight. It's a very, very good movie. It's really a story of going deeper and deeper into insanity. It really is. As soon as you get on the roller coaster, you're fucking going.
It's like hell. And it's like Frankenstein, because they keep killing more people and they keep wanting to experiment more and more and more, and it just gets worse and worse and worse and builds to this huge snowballing craziness at the end.
The cat, he's woken up to the sound of the cat being reanimated. They go down there, they prove to him that they fight the cat, they kill it again, the cat's back's broken, they bring it back again to prove it happens. He goes to the dean, explains what's going on. The dean then says does he get hit, say he's got to leave?
He says,
Dr. West as well.
Yeah,
he's got to fuck out of my university, basically.
So what happens?
Stop throwing cats at walls.
They've both been kicked out, but for some reason Dan's like really on board with this, so he sneaks Herbert into the morgue at night.
I think they should have done the bit where the security guard looks under the blanket and they just quickly cut it, and he just says to him, I think they should have left that as alone. And as soon as they pulled it in, he jumped out. I don't think they should have done that bit. I think that would have been
because they've got this inept security guard.
He's just into reading porn and jerking off.
There's
the
a
toilets.
Bit later on where, as Andy mentioned earlier, he goes off for a wank break because he goes, it's break time.
Wank time!
He just goes off for a cheeky wank.
Wankety wank, wankety wank.
He's getting paid to wank.
Wankety wank.
Hey, we've all been bored at work.
Not that
right, let's get into the story.
So they go into the morgue. Go on.
Oh, yeah. They're choosing corpses, going through them, and they decide, quite cleverly, to reanimate Arnold Schwarzenegger's stunt double.
From Terminator.
Of course they reanimate my double.
There's a lot of naked people in this movie. At least it's not Rock Rare Exports. Jesus,
too much naked man's cock in that.
That should be our theme for every episode. That should be our little thing we say. our mission statement for the podcast.
He even acted like Arnie the double. Like, you could see it was...
No, when he bent down, it was like... Dun, 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 dun. But it comes, the lightning comes along, and it's like, as a kid, one of the disturbing things is when he jumps on and you hear the bones crunching, and he pushes the door down, he jumps on the guy.
Oh yeah, man,
that kind of disturbing. That's what, that's the beauty of thing of sound design.
Bites his fingers off. That's the worst bit.
Yeah. So the Dean's come in, he's discovered, and he gets his fingers bitten off. He gets crushed. He gets killed, basically.
So they obviously bring him back to life.
Let's bring the Dean back to life.
But then the security guard comes in. Just as they've brought him back to life, and they just say that he went mad and came in,
and no one bothers to look into it.
It's like, come on,
your story.
But then he came in and he grabbed the cutter and just pushed it through Schwarzenegger's double.
It was a big drill thing. It goes through his back, at his chest.
It's good
blood
effects
everywhere.
Great effects.
It's really, really good and fucking gory.
So, Dr. Hill says he can take him under his supervision, and he can. I love the fact he's got that padded cell next to his office. Jesus.
Yeah.
And he can look up into him, and he asks Megan to sign the sign the paperwork to her dad, the release form to her dad, being able to be experimented on and discover what the problem was. And she said, "Well, if you can help him, please do."
And while they're discussing this, he's in the background headbutting the window, isn't he?
But Megan's already discovered. She came in to find the cat. Right at the end of the Herbert and Dan talking about the dead cat, and she came in to find the dead cat reanimated again. So she knows that those guys are doing something really fucked up anyway. So she's already a little bit confused, as in, like, is my boyfriend and Herbert West had something to do with my dad?
Well, Dan tells her, doesn't he?
All of a sudden, the dad just goes mental, just like, how could that have happened? So she's a little bit dubious of her ex, pretty much now, boyfriend. What happens now?
Well, Dr. Hill then says, he gets hold of West at one point, Herbert, and he says he knows what's going on.
Why he screams in pain when we both know he's quite dead.
He's got no pulse, he knows what's going on there. He knows he's not just insane, he's a corpse, you know, he's reanimated. So, does he kills him with a shovel, doesn't he, West?
Takes his head off.
Takes, like, the most of his top of his head off with a shovel, Dr. Hill, and then thinks, fuck it, while I'm here, I'll reanimate that as well.
Parts, I've never done whole parts.
That's what he says, I've never done whole parts before. And this leads up to a great gag later on, which we'll get to when we get to that.
I love Dr. Hill's headless walking corpse, just wandering around.
I know, it's hilarious. Picks up the head.
It's fucking great. It's so simple.
Arms flailing so everywhere, knocking everything over.
Before that, I love the bit as well where he's trying to prop the head up, where Herbert's cut himself, he's trying to prop the head up, and he keeps knocking over, and I don't know whether it was an outtake and he just kept rolling with it, and then he sees the thing you put, like, post-it notes or whatever on, and he just, like, slams the head down.
It's very funny. Slapstick.
I love the fact he, like I said, he was a bit like Dracula, the way he could persuade people into doing things. He can still do it as a severed head, and he gets somehow the lobotomized Dean to do his bidding.
But that's because,
how?
Because they've been reanimated. This is my take on it, John. What do you think?
Yeah,
because
he does explain the
connection.
Because he lobotomizes them, and so he's got complete mastery of their will.
So he can. Because they're both gone for this reanimation process.
So if this actually happens, say West managed to do this, and we actually lived in a world where he could be reanimated, but we had this link, that'd be a good movie. That's what they should do for the next one. Yeah. Part four.
Let's do it. Bye. Joking, we're still here.
Yep.
What goes on next?
Meg getting a bit ahead. Oh, it's a bit jumping ahead.
Well, just before that, you've got this great gag where it's revealed that Dr. Hill is obsessed with Meg, and they're worried about what he's going to do, because he knocks Herbert out, doesn't he? And Herbert wakes up, and the head and the corpse are gone of Dr. Hill.
And all of his work. Okay. How this happened, then they left the building. What, he just walked down the street with a head and a backload of bags.
Well, the security guard didn't know this. You know,
he's
still straight. Right. Past
is that you, Dr. Hill?
Of course it is.
Oh, yeah, no, he puts the fake head on.
So he gets one of these plastic heads that you see in medical schools.
That is fucking hilarious.
The surgical mask over it. It's
probably had like a nice little holdall or something somewhere in his office.
Oh, fuck it, this will do for my head.
Yeah, stick all the work in there on the test.
So the dad's been out to go get Meg and come back. Where's Bruce, Dan? Where's Dan at this point?
Oh, he doesn't he turn up at back at his house?
And well, where's he been? Where's he been? No.
He finds Bruce
has been knocked out.
No. Because there's a bit where Megan and Dan are having the conversation. That's when he goes, "I love you," and then crazy doctor guy comes in and smacks his head against the wall.
That's right. So he knocks him out.
So they're both knocked out.
So Dan is knocked out against a wall there.
So they have definitely been knocked out.
And then Herbert runs in, finds him there, wakes him up, and says, "Look, we've got to get off to."
That's a
hospital.
Great line there when Dan says he's dead. Not anymore.
Love it.
Yeah.
So
yeah, the naked Meg. Well, Meg's brought back. She's put down on a bed and she's stripped naked. Great titties.
Very
controversial.
We see super screaming.
And I don't mind.
And
not making the scream, just the naked bit, the scream down.
Just to set up how weirdly sick this fucking scene is, we basically got a headless guy who's kidnapped his...
When you wrote the script, if you were there and you wrote the script, it's just going to be like...
So you've got this headless guy...
I wrote the best thing ever.
He's got his mate, who to kidnap his own daughter, who's been lobotomised, bring him to him so that he can put his own decapitated head...
The daughter's not been lobotomised, did
that? No, the dad has. And so while the dad is watching this, although he's been lobotomised, he's watching his own daughter have a decapitated head go down on her. It's
an absurd
shot. You can see why people didn't like this
scene. If you haven't seen this movie, you've got to watch it. It's a side shot of a naked woman waking up to a headless torso and whole full body, holding a head about to lick her out.
It's
to be. Straight in there with what's going on.
Didn't Gail's wife left him because of that scene?
Fucking hell.
She was watching it in the cinema and she saw that scene, just turned to him and said, "Oh, David," walked out, and that was it. You know, divorce time.
Fuck her. That was great. You're going down in history for that shit, man.
Seriously, you've got to have a sense of humour about that.
Yeah, he's an actor.
Did he say when he got home and he was just having a bit of spaghetti bolognese in the glass of wine of his missus? Did a scene earlier. I think I should speak to you about. What was that? Well, my head is cut off, and there's a woman naked on a sort of like a bed, and they hold my head, but I actually had to have my head there under this blanket, and I look at her little moo-moo, and I have to pretend to go towards it like I'm going to give her the oral pleasure.
He does look her in the eye just before he's about to lick her and say, "I've always loved you, Megan." So. There is some.
Oh,
love
that's
there.
Romantic.
It's romantic.
I bet he's got a little glistening bit in his eye.
He's got a little something in her eye.
I think it might have been worth losing his wife over that because he
does his body. Does his body get a boner?
I don't know. Is there any blood flow?
He's putting blood in the tray for the head, isn't he? Like that's how the head stays. Like, I don't really know if you'd call it rehydrated.
That's great. The first time they do that, his face is like.
He's like.
Herbert West comes through, he runs in there and he starts talking to him. Who's going to believe a talking head? Get a job in a sideshow.
And then in the second one, I think it's, did he mention that his head had been found in a sideshow somewhere?
Oh, really?
Good callback.
Amazing. But it says it's squashed by at the end. Herbert West thinks he's there to save the day pretty much and sort it out. He just wants to get back his research, basically. That's all he cares about. He doesn't really give a fuck about it.
But he doesn't realise that Dr. Hill.
He doesn't have friends, he doesn't care.
Also,
Dr. Hill has a plan. His plan is quite a dark plan. All these body bags at the exact same time, somehow, all just stand up.
Well, if he's controlling them with his mind, you know.
Naked people everywhere. Wieners. Wieners everywhere.
There's a lot of naked dead bodies in this movie.
There's some flabby boobs and wieners.
A lot of game actors.
Yeah, but we were saying earlier that the crew were told to spray all the genitals with black paint so that they didn't stand out as much while they were doing the filming. And obviously the lights are flickering and stuff like that.
I thought I heard it was pubic wigs.
There were pubic wigs and there was black paint used. Everything they could to try and... Because they were more worried about that than they were the scene before where she gets head from her head. They were more worried about a few willies on scene. Do you know what I mean? It's like...
That was written at Stuart Gordon, said he did want that to be the first visual pun, head giving head.
It is. Works. It fucking works. And it's what this film is remembered for more than anything.
Well, this film, you put all that together, the effects in this, the score in this, the acting in this, the whole script itself, the story, it comes across as a very disturbing but very, very entertaining film come out of the 80s, mid-80s, 85, and it is a classic horror film, and I will enjoy every time for the rest of my life I watch that film until I'm reanimated and I can watch it more.
It feels like it should have been made in the early 90s because it was so ahead of its time. It feels like
they wouldn't have done it in the early 90s because of the fact that the movies were really on the downward slope towards the 90s to the mid-90s until like Scream came on to Juvenile. You know what I'm saying? They wouldn't actually have done that.
That
they
wouldn't have back on that. Was so tame, I think. In Dr. Giggles, a lot of the kills take place off screen. Exactly. I think at the time they were just scared and they didn't want to go too far with
it. And it was the VHS boom which helped sales for this movie. It really picked up. It came out straight away. And they did it uncut, this film. They didn't actually do it to take it to the Board of Certification.
So it was unrated.
So they couldn't actually advertise it in some of the more major newspapers. But this is obviously pre-internet again. Word of mouth must got around because it had really good sold out performances and stuff, but then it went.
Did it get banned? Was it a video nasty?
No, not an official one.
Surprising, really.
But the Texas Chainsaw Massacre wasn't. That's a whole other debate we can have another day, and the fact that they just looked at titles and just banned them, but that's another debate. It will always be a classic. I've got my notes here. Meg's quite hot,
brilliant.
But not as hot as she is now.
Brilliant. So she's aged like a fine wine.
And she was in, like I said earlier, that new movie, Your Next. I've not seen it yet.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, $1 million budget, we said. The effects crew comprised of students who had not done anything, but it was really free labour. They were being taught by the guy, and they said, we need to do this movie. So they got, these students had never done anything, just do the effects. Pretty good.
Pretty astounding job, really.
It's a good twist. Can we just quickly back to the plot? It's a really good twist end as well. It kind of ends with Dan sort of almost hinting that he's going to take over as the new sort of Herbert West. You know, he injects his dead girlfriend and then the screen fades to black and you hear her scream and you're like, it's kind of left nicely.
I'd like to know what happened there, because when you go in the second one, you come straight to Dan and Herbert West in a field hospital somewhere. There's no mention of the end, you know.
It's not great continuity between films.
I thought you say kind of Dan and Herbert West in a field, just randomly.
Just
Dan
in a field.
our work continues.
Well, I put this movie across as a very, very good movie. Yeah. I think we've debated it very well. Not debated at all, we've just discussed it very well.
There's nothing to not like, really.
If you're a horror fan, you can. Even if you're not maybe into... I'm not a fan of horror movies set in hospitals. I do get kind of bored of them. But, and like I said, I don't like Cronenberg movies that much. I'm not really into body horror. But... I don't know, this movie has, I think, something for everyone.
It's just not a dull moment in it.
It's a thoroughly entertaining film from the beginning all the way to the end.
It's an all-rounder, isn't it?
If you were like, should we go watch your anime now? But like,
The score, it's the acting, it's the writing, it's the production. It's the
should we rate this movie? Yeah. I give this, what have I given stuff before?
The most you've ever given anything is you gave something 35 thumbs up once.
What was that?
That was the burbs.
I'm gonna go 32 thumbs up.
Excellent. Andy, what are you gonna give this?
Having popped my reanimator cherry.
Oh yeah.
And giving Dr. Giggles 10 thumbs up.
Dr. Giggles 10 thumbs up.
This has gotta get more than that because this was easily better than Dr. Giggles. Just not so much of a nostalgia thing. So I don't know, 15 thumbs up.
15 thumbs up.
It's a winner.
It's a winner. Good.
Because
it will grow on you like a fine wine. The more you watch this film, I think you appreciate it even more. So definitely give it another viewing. And if you want, you can come back on the show and you can re-rate if you want.
I could have happily watched
Another Hill. John?
I don't know, I don't really have a scale for it. I mean, if I were to give...
You can just give it thumbs up if you want. Thumbs up or thumbs down, it's up to you.
I mean, if Braindead gets 100 thumbs up, this gets 95, it's very close.
I like that.
That's fucking...
I am going to go with John. I'm going to copy John here.
Last, not last episode, but episode 4, you gave something a Jeremy Beadle thumb.
I did.
When you're scarecrows.
Yeah. But this gets more than a Jeremy Beadle thumb. Oh, this is all, I agree with John. This, like, Braindead's one of my all-time favourites.
Yeah,
this
okay.
is, very similar
This
time.
Is a couple of shades below that. It's almost as good, but not quite. Okay. And maybe it's the nostalgia thing for me, because I've watched Braindead a thousand times from a very young age, but this is still up there. So I'd say 95 thumbs up, John, same as you.
Oh, shit. I think I should give it more. Okay, so that was Reanimator for our double bill of YouTube
films. It's on YouTube, forgot to say that one.
And now we have a advert for another podcast.
Ooh, exciting.
The podcast which you're about to listen to is an account of the viewing experiences which befell two Scottish men. It is all the more tragic in that they were young and enthusiastic. But had they lived very, very long lives, they could not have expected, nor would they have wished to have watched as much of the mad and macabre movies they did. For them, a friendship and shared interest in horror movies became a nightmare. The events of their viewing were to lead to the discovery of one of the most bizarre podcasts in the annals of podcast history. The Podcast Under the Stairs. The Podcast Under the Stairs can be found at podcastunderthestairs.wordpress.com or on iTunes.
Hi, welcome back to World of the Strange.
Welcome back. Now we have World of the Strange. We're talking about the infamous killer. Well, he is a bit infamous now, nicknamed Dr. Death. He was a doctor by the name of Harold Shipman in England. Over the course of
23 years.
Yeah, from 75 to 98, he basically killed in the region of 250 plus people. And he was killing them from being their doctor, who they entrusted. And they would go to see him, and he would... What did he do? Did he administrate...
He would do it... I think it was mainly injections, wasn't it? I'm not sure what it was he was injecting.
And he was slowly killing them, wasn't it, really?
Yeah, some of them he just killed straight off. Like, it was mainly in their own home, I think. This was the thing, like, they trust... Like you said, they trusted him. And he came round to see them. And they were all pretty much elderly.
Because he looks... Yeah, you're looking at him, he doesn't look that sketchy. He looks like you're...
Just looks like a teacher, like a tired teacher.
Yeah. This guy is kind of crazy, and he just basically didn't care, you know, to be like that. He just really didn't care.
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I think he did care, and that's why he was doing it in his own deranged head.
What, he was trying to help them?
Well, it's like you were saying, Andy.
He was considering euthanasia, wasn't he? He was just essentially... He believed he was helping people, I think.
He thought he was helping these people end their lives quicker. Way. I mean, they were mainly elderly, weren't they? What was the youngest one?
The youngest 40, 41.
41.
So 41 and above. They're all quite elderly. Yes, I don't understand how he didn't get caught.
So yeah, they discovered a pattern of his administering lethal doses of diamorphine, signing patients' death certificates, and then falsifying medical records to indicate that they had been in poor health.
Wow. So he knew what he was doing.
Yeah.
Well, when he was younger, he saw his mother was ill, and he was particularly close to her. She died of lung cancer when he was 17 years old. He was watching. This is. They seem to think he managed to get his own modus operandi, and just from watching her being administrated morphine, but at home by a doctor. So he was getting the ideas then. I find that kind of strange. But was this his plan from the get go?
I mean, he's clever enough to become a doctor when he's old.
Yeah, it's just. You know, that's pretty crazy. Studied medicine for a while. He graduated. And then he had a practitioner position at a medical centre in Yorkshire. Oh, Yorkshire being obviously other serial killer realm.
Oh, yeah, Ripper. Yorkshire Ripper, yeah.
Yorkshire Ripper.
And yeah, he's giving these prescriptions to people.
Yeah, he's forging prescriptions for his own use, actually, and he was fined for that. So he's already, like, to me, if you're doing that, you shouldn't really be allowed to be a doctor anymore if you're doing
that. Well, really, no.
He carried on doing it, and like you say, over 23 years, managed to off in the, like you say, 250 plus. I don't even think they'll ever know, really, how many he's killed. Just on a side note, not that this is anything for him to brag about or us to brag about, but he is the biggest, the most prolific serial killer ever because of just through sheer numbers, which is nuts. Considering, I just don't understand how he didn't get caught. That's what blows my mind about this. That, like, obviously he did get caught eventually, but
I remember sort of seeing it in a newspaper or something. It's just like I'm reading it, and it's just like that is absolutely crazy. And they're just, this guy has just got through the system and managed to do this and kill so many people.
I think it's just because a lot of what goes on in the NHS is based on records and, you know, recorded events. And if he's responsible for recording those events, there's a bond of trust. If the doctor is signing these death certificates and saying these are the cause of death, then there's a certain amount of trust that goes into that. So it's his falsifying and that covered up a lot of what he was doing.
It's a double thing, isn't it? Because not only is he A, killing these people, but then he's B, covering it up by changing the death certificate. So he's kind of covered himself twice, really. You know, they're old, and plus they're old, so people kind of expect older people to just pass on, and especially if their death certificate now says that they died of this or that, whatever he decides to put down that suits how he's killed them.
He was arrested, and he was went down for, I think it was 15 life sentences or something like that.
15 life sentences. Bloody hell. It's just blowing my mind that I just don't know how he got away.
He is a pussy, the fact that he ended up just committing suicide.
Yeah, that's as often the case, really, isn't it?
Hung himself with his sheets.
His phone hung in his cell. I think it's pretty weird that they made a film of this quite quickly after, not long ago.
I don't think that's weird at all.
I thought they should have waited.
If there's money to be made,
they should have waited, though. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought Anthony Hopkins was approached at one point to play the role. I think somebody like that was who quite obviously turned it down. This is quite a touchy subject.
Yeah, definitely.
It's quite a fresh, still quite a fresh thing, really. I mean, I think he only hung himself in the last sort of 10 years, whenever it
was.
Yeah,
totally. I think this world is strange. There's nothing we can sort of mock or laugh about this. It's quite a bleak thing and quite a horrible thing. But he is named Dr. Death.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's horrible that he's been called that, but I still think just even Dr. Shipman or Dr. Harold Shipman strikes this sort of fear into your heart now when you hear that.
Dr. Shit.
Dr. Shit would be awful.
He was a bit Dr. Shit, though, wasn't he?
I think, hopefully, this has changed. Not that we shouldn't trust our doctors, but it's made people look at things differently.
There was a full review of the whole the way things are done after this.
Yeah, of course.
Because doctors could get away with anything up until this point.
Yeah, and in some ways that, I don't want to say it's a good thing, Cummers, but at least you can kind of look at some sort of silver lining hopefully doesn't happen again. But to be that many people, why couldn't it just been 10 people then?
You've got to feel sorry as well for the victims.
He was getting money though from them, some of them, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was getting money from some of them.
Getting written into the wills and stuff like that.
He was becoming friends with them, so it was very devious. As well as being a psycho, he knew what he was doing,
and he couldn't have had any remorse or any feeling towards it. I just don't think he.
But there was no
cared,
confession or anything like that. He continued to deny, and even his wife was like saying she had no idea what was going on. And
he was just acting like such a normal guy.
But would this be spanning from his childhood?
Yeah, this is a weird one, isn't it? Like something's obviously affected him.
Very close to his mother. You always hear that.
It's always the way, isn't it? It's the Norman Bates syndrome.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. I've just noticed it was 2004 he committed suicide. He was found the day before his 58th birthday in a cell, which is actually the day after your birthday, Gab, you said, didn't you?
Yeah.
Just a crazy, sad case, really.
Rob Zombie has the same birthday as me.
That's Rob Zombie as well, though.
Mm-hmm.
I reckon he's to blame for this.
He's making a new horror movie.
He is making a new horror movie. Not the ice hockey movie.
No. It's more of a Devil's Rejects type thing, which I'm quite digging. Anyway, back on track.
Also interesting to see, this is highlights the wonderful standard of journalism that we have in the UK. The Sun ran a celebratory front page headline after his suicide was announced, The headline was "Ship, Ship, Hooray!" And apparently, they encouraged other serial killers to follow his example and kill themselves.
Oh my god!
So
the good old son, you've got to love the son, haven't you?
But there goes that whole debate: is in should people like that be killed, or do you know what I mean, death penalty, or should they be just locked up to suffer the pain mentally of being locked up and restrained?
I mean, there's no helping somebody like that who's as old as he was and who's done what he's done, really. I don't agree with the death penalty.
But at the same time, I'm almost a bit like, well, why should we spend money at keeping someone alive? There's that as well. It's a debate with pros and cons on both sides.
Oh my word, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
He was considering suicide so his widow could receive a National Health Service pension and a lump sum, even though he'd been stripped of his own pension.
That's just crazy. This guy was a bit of a piss taker as well.
No, I didn't know this. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, that's World of Strange. Cool, that was a bit fucking...
Bit of a downer, that one.
Oh, God, fucking hell. But have you got any jokes? Do you know a joke?
Doctor, I don't know.
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Doctor.
Doctor who?
Yeah. Oh, fucking hell.
No, we could do the...
What, a doctor joke?
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I can't remember it. It's the one about... Doctor, I've got a steering wheel down my trousers. How do you know? Because it's driving me nuts.
Hey! And that was World of the Strange.
That's all the time we've got for this week on World of the
Strange.
Next week, though... Gimme Ira. Hairless pets. Weird.
So that was World of the Strange. It was a bit bloody depressing, wasn't it, really?
Yeah.
At least had a couple of doctor jokes at the end. Now it's our music segment. I'm not being big-headed playing my own music, but it just seemed like an easy one to go for. It's from my album, Revenge of Dr. Death, which you can get for free. Send me a message if you want a copy. And the song is Revenge of Dr. Death. So nothing to do with Harold Shipman. I could have probably got vocal samples from him or something, but that'd have been a bit...
That would have been weird.
It'd been a bit under the belt, really, wouldn't it? Okay, enjoy.
Sit down. One day I'll tell you everything. There's no time now. I began 5 years ago, in secret, working all night, every night, right into the dawn. 1,000 experiments, 1,000 failures. And then, at last, the great wonderful day. The fools wouldn't let me work in peace. I had to teach them a lesson. But why? Why do it? Just a scientific experiment at first. That's all. To do something no other man in the world had done. But there's more to it than that. I know now. It came to me suddenly. The drugs I took seemed to light up my brain. Suddenly I realized the power I held. The power to rule. To make the world grovel at my feet. And experiments. 1,000 failures.
You're bringing Dr. Death back to life.
Wonderful day.
coming.
What was that song called, Gav?
The Revenge of Dr. Death.
Who is it by?
Me.
Yay! Well done.
Like it was that. Appropriate for our Mad Doctor episode. This has been episode 6 of the House on... the podcast on Haunted Hill. Oh, I do say that a few times. The amount of times I've had to edit that out and be saying the House on Haunted Hill.
It's been good to have a couple of... guests, doesn't it?
It's been nice. We're sitting above dead people in a funeral parlour right now, talking about dead people and mad doctors.
It's been an honour and a privilege.
I'm sure you guys will join us again for a future podcast. Episode 7 in a couple of weeks' time from whenever this has aired and whenever you're probably listening to it. We're going to have a bit of a Toby Hooper thing going on. We're going to watch Funhouse and Life Force, both are YouTube films, and we... we'll probably slightly discuss Toby Hooper a little bit so maybe not a World of Strange and we'll just do a World of Toby Hooper,
which is quite strange.
World of the
world.
Hooper, yeah, strange world. Probably is, isn't it?
I've not seen either of those, so I'm looking forward to both of those.
I've enjoyed this episode, it's been alright. I got to meet the Dr. Shipman for World of the Strange segment. It was a little bit depressing.
It was a bit of a downer.
Jesus, John, you haven't heard that. The end, we perked up by doing some Doctor jokes, not who's that, and you know, it's just.
Andy told a cracker.
Didn't you know any Doctor jokes?
No. Okay. Off the top of my head.
Well, all of you audience, please, listeners, please stay safe. And if you're going to go and hurt yourself and get medical treatment done on you, make sure it's not a dodgy guy with a beard who's called
Dr.
Harold,
West, Dr. Giggles, Dr. Shipman, or Dr. Terror, or Dr. Death. Any of these guys,
Hans Gruber. Just say, can I just go see someone else and go to A&E or something?
My doctor is called Dr. Doom. Is that all right? Should I get another doctor? Is he all right?
Mine's Dr. Love.
Dr. Love. Okay.
Sometimes we call him Dr. Glove, but that's for medical things we don't talk about.
Ooh. Okay. Interesting. John and Andy, have you guys got anything you want to add?
No.
Andy's Chris.
I look forward to hearing it.
Good.
Okay. Right,
well, thanks very much, and
we'll
see you guys soon.
How are we going to do this one? It's not really the two Ronnies, it's the four Ronnies.
Well, it's a good night from me.
And it's a good night from me.
Good night from them.
And a good night from all of us.
Yay!
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the podcast on Haunted Hill. We will be back again real soon.